Hi, my name is Katie Doyle. I am the assistant curator at the New Mexico Museum of Art here on the plaza. I am sitting here with Herbert Lotz, a photographer and friend of Rick Dillingham. We will be recording an oral history for the Rick Dillingham retrospective exhibition To Make, Unmake, and Make Again. This oral history will go into the digital archive belonging to the New Mexico Museum of Art and will be held in perpetuity for scholarly research and posterity and record. It is 2:05 p.m. on Tuesday, the 2nd of May. We're down in the basement in Mary Scully's former office, and we'll probably dive right in. So, the first question on our interview is when and how did you meet Rick Dillingham?
Well, Katie, I thought about that, and I truly, I mean, at this point, Rick died in 94. It's now 30 years later. And I've tried to remember when we met, and I don't know, quite honestly. If it was when he was in college down at UNM or when he came back from Claremont, I'm not sure, quite honestly. I can't pull that out of my memory. But what I wrote down was we were probably introduced through the gay community here in Santa Fe. And that would have been when he probably first moved here. The community was small, very connected. We had a bar, a local bar that we all went to called the Senate Lounge, that used to be primarily was for the legislature when they were having, in town they were doing the meetings. And then somehow it became more popular with the gay community and the gay community kind of took it over. And that's, so I know that Rick and I would have hung out there. Yeah, when did he show up here? I'm just not sure. But we might have also gotten connected through, I was working for the school, at the time it was called the School of American Research. I was documenting a lot of the work that they had in their archives. And I know that I believe he worked with them at some point. And I also worked with a woman named Vicki Laszlo. And she would put pots back together. And I think she worked for the School for American Research as well. Do you know Vicki Laszlo? Okay. And so, there was a connection between Vicki, I think, and Rick and myself and the school. So that was also part of how that happened. I also wrote down, being a photographer and photographing artwork, that's what I did. There were probably, a few of us photographers in town, but Rick and I connected very early about photographing his work, and he liked the way that I approached his work. I'd photographed a lot of the Native American pottery, and so I was fairly good, I think, at lighting around, around objects like that to show their dimension, to keep them in perspective. And I think he appreciated that very much. I mean, I did a book with Richard Spivey about Maria Martinez working with all that black pottery. And again, that can be very difficult to photograph. These are the old days when you weren't using electronic imaging. So you really had to work with lighting in a very controlled way. Anyway, Rick appreciated that very much. And so, very quickly, I became his photographer and photographed all of his work.
So, when thinking about like the relationship that you had with Rick, like what how would you describe like the nature of your relationship out, aside from like the business aspect of like just photographing the work? Were you friends?
Yeah, we were friends. I mean, any community that you belong to, and like, we We socialized. Rick had a great sense of humor. And I like to think that I have a great sense of humor. So, you know, our times together was always very enjoyable. You know, yes, we worked together, but there was always humor in the relationship. And I think there was affection for each other. We were never romantically involved, but, you know, I loved him very much. And again, you know, he had a very rich, foundation of friendships and acquaintances and businesses that he worked with here. You know, he was not a very singular person. He had a lot of relationships, a lot of people that I never met, never knew. He was well respected by just pretty much everybody that worked with him. And so I wrote down here that we became very close friends. We did do books together. So, you know, if he wanted to work on a book for one reason or another, we would start working on that. So that involved the friendship, but it also involved what he was trying to do. And having shot many books, you know, I could do that for him. I could provide the material, the visual material that he needed for these books. And I think is one of them 14 families? I'm trying to remember the books that we did together. I can't get right off the top of my head, but they're very beautiful. You know, they're very beautiful books. Also, you know, we danced together. I loved country western dancing because I was a cowboy then. You may not know this about me. I worked at a horse barn for 17 years. I had two horses. I was aboard. Is this about me or about Rick?
It's about Rick. Okay. But we'll have one about you later, actually. Yeah.
You can edit it. Anyway, I was on the board of the Rodeo Ave de Santa Fe. You know, I in amateur rodeo, I did a number of speed events and mm-hmm. different things like that with my last horse. And so Rick and I were very involved in the country western scene in terms of dancing and things like that. And we had more damn fun dancing. He liked to follow and he followed beautifully. And I liked to lead and I led well. And so we would have more damn fun, excuse my language, country western dancing. So, you know, that was another gift that he had. Mm-hmm. Musically inclined, you know, he could dance, sing, you name it. A very, very gifted man. There are not that many people like Rick, mm-hmm. you know, that show up in life. So I also wrote down, and we socialized together. We had a lot of friends in common. So, you know, and that is going out to dinner. That is, again, the rodeo stuff. You know, different gatherings and groups. Mm-hmm. So we socialized a lot together. We were good friends.
Yeah. Someone told me you had nicknames for each other.
Well, those were given to us.
Oh, yeah?
I didn't take one myself. The one that they gave to Rick was Penny. Yeah, Penny. And why they called him Penny, I don't know. I'm not going to share with you.
What
they called me.
Yeah, someone told me you had nicknames. I wanted to know what the story was.
Well, you know, back in the early 70s, there were some gay men who came over to New Mexico, artists, and they brought with them this whole contemporary gay attitude that I'd never run into before, where they called each other by girls' names and occasionally they would get in drag and like, what is this? You know, I'm this guy that just got out of the army. All I had was a motorcycle, you know, lived in a little old adobe out west of town. Again, it's not about me, but that was about the time, you know, that this was going on. So a lot was changing. Mm-hmm. And so they gave us people names. Whether we liked him or not.
So I guess we've kind of gotten into this a little bit already, but how would you describe Rick? And like you said, he had a lot of relationships with a lot of different people. So I imagine your experience of Rick and how you saw him, and how he was with you was probably very different than how he might have been with around other people, depending on, you know, what he was doing.
Probably. But, you know, what I wrote down is that we must not remember that he was a very talented artist. Mm-hmm. He was not an ordinary artist. Mm-hmm. And where he drew Where he drew his inspiration from, I don't really know, but I observed him always working, always making things. He was incredibly creative, and that was just part of who he was, and incredibly talented. I mean, I have known a number of people who worked in ceramics and ceramic artists, and yes, you know, primarily they did bowls or they did jars or things like that, but he took it a step or many steps further than simply that. I mean, as you know, with the gas cans, that was a whole other body of work that he did that is just extraordinary. And it was never surprising what he did. He seemed to allow that creative gift that he had just to flow through him without even really thinking about it that much. You know, how he approached things, it just came out of him. You know, he was not overly intellectual about what he was doing. That was my take on it. It just flowed from him so freely. I wrote down that he was scholastic, and he was. He was a very bright man, and so was very involved in a lot of things scholastically. And that's also who he was. That part of him, I don't know that I knew that well, because that was involved in his writing, in the different things that he did. Like, you know, I'm trying to remember the name of the gallery in New York where he showed, and it's escaped me right now, but you know, I know that he showed work around the country. He had many people that he knew that purchased his work. And so he, again, he lived at many levels culturally in society. And I just knew him simply as the one that we did together. And I never tried to push my way into his life in those other areas. He kept that, it's interesting because he kept all those different lives as they were with those people that he got involved with. He didn't bring us all together like, you know, someone overly codependent would. You know, he kept things in order in an amazing way, and he did a very good job of that. Yeah. What else did I write down that? Yeah, he was not in one simple group, but many business and social layers in terms of his life and who he was. So, but I got to see that from afar, and particularly, you know, in photographing his work, the different people that owned it, where I saw things go, the exhibits he had. Yeah. I don't know if I can add anything to that.
You don't have to. You don't want to.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you remember most vividly about Rick? And I feel like we've been talking a lot about that, but if anything, one thing kind of pops into your mind, or if you have something written down.
Yeah, what I wrote down is I remember most his lively personality. Very engaging. And that was it. I mean, he was so easy to be with and talk to. You know, he engaged you as you engaged him. He didn't hold back, he didn't hide. He was so present in his life. And I'm sure you would hear that from many people who knew him, and he had this amazing personality. You know, he could be quiet, but by and large, no. He was very engaging. And I wrote down, yeah, he got his hands dirty. And so that's one of the things that I like about all people, all artists who get their hands dirty. Dirt is something that I love, and Rick loved dirt, and he made art out of dirt. I make adobe out of dirt, you know, building and things like that, but he made art out of dirt. And if anybody knows, you know, if you know anything about dirt, and I don't know that Rick and I ever really talked about this that much, but all life dissolves into dirt, and it's all around us. Century upon century upon century of life turns into the dirt we walk on. And he was making clay, you know, he was making art out of that clay. And anyway, so there it is, you know, it got turned into something extraordinary. And there within those walls of that clay, you know, is the history of that earth. So I thought that was pretty amazing. You know, I guess that would be true for any artist, but he did not have any trouble getting his hands dirty, you know. And he had a very creative spirit, I wrote down, you know, and how do we get that? Because I, you know, being a photographer, being an artist, living in Santa Fe for over almost 55 years, I've met an awful lot of artists, and I've photographed a lot of artists' work. And I want to say some of them have a larger creative spirit than others. I'll never know why all artists go into the work that they do, but they were given a gift, I think, upon birth. And if they're willing to look into that gift and allow it to express itself, their art starts to grow, and they move into this in life. And if they're willing to continue to let that grow, they do amazing things. Obviously, not everyone is an artist, but Rick was an artist, and he allowed that gift to be expressed and to continue to grow. And not everybody does that. Many artists will get to a point where they're successful, and they'll do that over and over and over again. And Rick was not that way. It's, let's go to the next challenge. Let's go to the next challenge. Whether it's successful or not, I'm moving on. And he continued to do the variety of things that he did, but he never got stuck, you know, in a place, in my view. And again, that was one of his greatest gifts. The man was amazing. He's an amazing guy. I also wrote down that he had a large persona. I think we talked about that. You lead, I'll follow. Oh, I'd like to meet so-and-so. Oh, I'd like to meet so-and-so. Yeah, at his gatherings, I meet some of the most amazing people. People that I would not run into in my life. And there we all were, you know, and they were all there because of Rick.
Yeah. I heard he was quite the trash talker, too.
Funny, I don't hear that because I must be a trash talker. But I'm trying not to be.
We are in New Mexico. I feel like that's part of this part of the culture here. We love trash talk.
And I love the culture. I mean, I love it too. New Mexico is an incredible it's a unique experience to live here. Not everybody loves that, but I totally love it. I love the Hispanic culture and language and having an Italian mother and living in that kind of Italian culture. I feel very comfortable here.
Oh, you're fine. I guess like you touched a little bit on this, but how did Rick's personality manifest itself in his artwork, and how did you see that also in his scholarly practice, which you had an eye into?
Okay, what I wrote down was that he took inspiration from others, but he made it his own. He didn't steal from others. He allowed himself to be moved by other people's work and other people. But then it went into Rick, and then it came out as Rick's. He didn't copy or steal from others. You know, yes, he was inspired by other artists and historic, you know, pottery and historic people. And I think history is important to him. But he didn't steal. He allowed it to come into his persona, into his intellect, into his creativity. But then it came out as Rick's. And that's wonderful. You know, that's sort of also amazing. Not everybody does that, because a lot of people steal. You know, but he didn't do that, in my view. That's pretty simple, I think.
And I guess, like, to that end, too, you know, you've talked about Maria Martinez, you've talked about his pottery practice and relationship to some of the communities that he's close with. So how would you describe Rick's relationship with the various communities that he kind of existed within?
Well, that's it. He moved in many. I wrote down he moved in many communities, you know, from clients to his galleries. You know, he never really imparted to me his relationship with those other people and those other communities. Our relationship was our own. He did not bring me into that. And I don't think he did that with his other friends as well. You know, he had the friendships that he had as friends were theirs. And he didn't try to overlay, those other relationships, either because of their importance or they were or for any reason. I mean, he did not hold back introducing you as his friends, but then that was an interview if you were going to do something with that. Again, you know, I don't know how much you know or that, I mean, I'm talking about codependence, but a lot of people, particularly artists or people who have to work for a living, can become very codependent in how they achieve their goals and dealing with other people. And Rick was never really out of balance with that. He kept his own, his own integrity, his own power. Yes, he loved other people, but they didn't run his life. He was his own man in that sense. I wrote down, he had a large bunch of friends. And then, why that? Because he was so engaging. You know, no matter who the people were that he was involved with, they all, in that side place, I mean, there's a photograph of him sitting on my motorcycle. There's a friend named Tom King who was standing next to us. And Tom was a, he was in the markets. He was a financial guy. And I'm not sure why Tom came over to New Mexico, but he did. And, you know, they developed a great friendship. Rick eventually picked his own motorcycle. And I was a little cautious about that. I'd always been on motorcycles in my adult life. But, you know, he wasn't. He had a Porsche. He had, what else did those guys have? I don't remember now. But as he became more successful at that point, he did well. He bought a Harley. Harley gave us the motorcycle. And he continued to remodel his home and his studio. And he did a great job with that. His humor, again, his humor was so engaging that I don't think that any of his friends, or how can I put this, he brought so many people into his life with his humor. And we see this, humor is very engaging and allows you into the heart of others. He had a very open heart, but he also has very good boundaries, about himself and about his words and about his eyes. And one had to appreciate that. At some level, I'm talking to you now, I realize he had a little maturity, perhaps. I didn't hide at that time. And how did he have that maturity? I don't know. But he did. But he could do that.
Do you have a favorite memory or story about Rick that you would like to share? And obviously, you're welcome to share more than one.
I have a couple of things that I wrote down that I thought about. Because when I think of Rick, have you ever done a country western dancing?
It's been a minute. But yeah, it's been a while.
They still do it at the social club.
They have a country western dancing night.
Well, for anyone who does country western dancing, you're arm in arm. One leg and one follow the other. But you actually ask it as it. And so when Rick and I danced, we were not a couple, but we were a couple in this movement. And he followed us so well that, we would dance around the floor. And with other guys in the gay bars. When they had parties. He was an amazing dancing partner. That's what we loved about each other. And the other thing I wrote down was that the intimacy was shared as his life was ending. So in 1981, we discovered this virus called, what do you call it? And HIV. Gay related immunodeficiency. GRID. They called it GRID. And I first became aware of it with a friend of mine from Los Angeles, who I had met, and he was concerned about that possibly having habits of his behavior. So this was like 1991. And so then all of us, watched from the early 80s until the mid to late 90s. People, gay men, and others, dying, HIV, AIDS. My ex died in 1990. Rick died in 1994. And I've often wondered if he'd lived another year here, if the medications that were coming out at that point would have allowed his life to go on. Because many of the men who lived that long, they did, they got a medication.
experiences in their lives.
But as he has approached the end of his life, he went into it. And there were maybe three or four of us,
friends of his,
that he wanted to be with him, when he left. And so his doctor, Dr. Watkins. I think I mentioned this. But anyway, his doctor was at Minnesota, and I think there were three or four of us who stayed with him by his body. And so the morphine stopped breathing,
and he passed.
And then we were able to clean his body, which we left his body. We grabbed a sheet. I took him to one of the crematoriums. I can't remember the name of it now. And then let us put his body into the crematorium itself.
So we got to take him.
We got to take him from that place at home.
To the crematorium.
And I'll never forget that. No, I'm buried in my life. Who died for reasons, now 77 years old.
When we get to this age, you're buried.
But that's why we never ever get. That he allowed us to be in the process. And it's some conscience.
It's a very, very important part of my memory.
He didn't hide that.
So I think those were the two things that are most.
Was that he did that for us and then he'll see. So I saw his eyes to come, nothing about me.
This is wonderful to go back and look at all the work I've been together and to look at all of his work.
Because I've been spending so much time just looking at his work,
except on this project that you're doing, so you can see him.
And I'm looking at it, and I take so much for granted,
because I've done so much with so many people,
but Rick,
occupies a very special place. And for my whole shells, he occupies a very special place. And love that I have cats and books and books that you have together.
Yeah.
We so much about how his wife's in it. Can I think of anything else?
Are you worried about Harley? Harley?
I get my first car until I was 36. When I got service.
Quite a journey.
Kind of
fascination sort of covering these different parts of Rick, you know, and understanding him as a person, not just as an artist, but what he was. And like you said, he planned the estate, but Juliet Myers, his assistant, executed it. And so I have yet to speak with Juliet. Truthfully, I am a little bit apprehensive to approach Juliet. Just because, she was also with him and in his final moments.
And I can tell
that it's very, very close. My desire to be respectful is sort of turning into anxiety.
but I know
it's no big deal, but at the same time,
they were very close in the very ending. Because she was his assistant. Yes. She worked for him and was with him so often.
All the time
in the studio. Mm-hmm. So, she's got a lot of information. I would very much have her speak to you. Only because, I love Juliet. We met in 1984 when she moved over here. She was my assistant for a week.
Pretty good, I think.
She's got a very good mind. I would not be intimidated at all. She's very loving. I was also going to mention something I forgot is I don't think Rick ever wore shorts.
Yeah, no shorts.
A shorts ever.
No shorts ever.
even when he was out like in mud and collecting cow pies, probably not. I don't want to wear shorts than that. But thinking about him being in like a river, like a hauling alley out.
Yeah, I'm also thinking, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking, you know, back in the days, we used to wear shorts.
They were like running, right, or doing like playing basketball or
things like that. I mean, where I was raised, I mean, my father said, after 50, you're going to wear shorts. You know, well, that's not the case now. People wait till they're 50 to start wearing shorts.
No one can tell you anything.
We've drifted.
Or we've achieved something, who knows, you know? One or the other.
But I would definitely spend time with Juliet and let her open up a lot quick, because there's a lot of information
there. Yeah.
And please don't be intimidated.
I'm mostly not intimidated, I think. I'm just...
You got a lot of, yeah, if anyone should be intimidated, it should be Juliet. Nice.
I'm over here cracking jokes about Gladys Kravitz on TV. So you got... No one has anything to worry about with me, but well, if you feel like we've reached the end of your memory mine, and if you're feeling, is your mouth tired?
No, my mouth is not tired. I mean, I'm talking to God, but. I'm just trying to think anything more about his spirit and who he was. And, you know, I think maybe I've shared, you know, all that's going to come forward, unless we just continue to talk about, you know, everyday things. But, you know, again, when he died in 94, that's 30 years ago. I'm very lucky to have a lot of friends. So, you know, I haven't thought that much about Rick, you know, on an ongoing basis, other than, you know, it's sad that we lost him. And because he was an amazing human being and artist. And I just love that you're doing this exhibit to honor him.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Very cool.
Thank you. I'm excited. October 6th.
Yeah.
October 6th, 2023, the show opens. So it is 2:42 p.m., and we will conclude the interview at this time.